Working Cows Podcast, episode 177.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Conry, host of the Working Cows Podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. I'm really excited to be here today in the rodeo zone, and we are here today on behalf of South Dakota Farm Bureau, and we are talking today with Ken Charferus of Wall Meats, and we are going to talk to him about the importance of local meat processing. And I'd like to say a shout out and a thank you to the FFA Association of South Dakota for putting this together and making this happen. So really excited for this opportunity. Ken, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, thanks, Clay. I'm glad to be here. And FFA for inviting us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a pretty neat opportunity. And you've got some big things going on and some big visions, and I guess we've talked a little bit and got a chance to know each other a little bit, and I really appreciate your heart and your drive and your passion for the issues that we're going to talk about today surrounding local meat processing. And I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what are the issues facing producers of meat and consumers of meat that you are trying to fix through your efforts?
Oh, thanks, Clay. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, for our producers, there's a lack or not enough processing slots for our producers. And our attempt to help in that format is actually moving forward, having a retail store in Rapid City, and then hopefully building a new meat plant to accommodate more of our producers for processing beef and pork.
Sure. And what about the consumer side of that difficulty? What are some of the challenges that they're facing?
Well, some of the challenges that we've seen, because we continue to go to Rapid City weekly, even though we just do our sales out of a meat truck or a reefer truck, they seem to not find the right protein product that they are accustomed to or now have been accustomed to since we've been going to Rapid City for the last now 9 months. So sure. our challenge is to give them the right protein at the right price at the right time. And we're doing our best to try and meet that demand.
And in what is the model that you are pursuing as far as getting that meat from the producer to the consumer?
So we do a lot of direct marketing with our producers. So we buy it from our producers, and we process it as best we can with the right tools, of course, and the right people. And then we send it to a retail setting to offer it to our consumers.
And that retail setting is generally a grocery store, the meat department of a grocery store?
Absolutely. That also is included in our business plan is grocery stores. We also provide restaurants, protein, Meals on Wheels program, the Beef to School program. We've kind of hit that, and it's kind of skyrocketing at this point with 11 schools involved.
Yeah, that's amazing. Talk to me a little bit about that Beef to School program.
Yeah, so what we do is we purchase beef from or get donated beef from our producers. We process it at whatever protein to fat content that school, that particular school, requires us to. So we go through that processing effort, and then we deliver it to those schools that require or that are in the program. And so far there's about 11 of those fine schools that are taking the fine beef and using it as a protein.
And what is what's the limitation in that supply chain? Or another way to ask that question, do you have more people who would, more schools who would take beef if it was available, or are you able to meet the demand currently with the beef that you guys are processing?
We're meeting all the demands that are required at this point, and we're just inviting more schools if they prefer to join the program. It really isn't that difficult. Now, what's we're finding is hard is some of the schools don't have cooking appliances. They all have is warming appliances. So they require a pre-cooked product. We're getting to that point. And that's another part of our business line in the new meat plant we're building is providing pre-cooked product.
Gotcha. Yeah. What are some of the other directions, or I guess maybe a better way to say that is I see a lot of middlemen in between the producer of the beef and the consumer of the beef. The way that you are approaching this, are you cutting out some of those middlemen between the producer and the consumer?
Well, we're doing our best to do that. I don't think we can handle the whole industry, but at a little local level, at a smaller level, we're doing exactly that. We are actually the buyer of the beef, the processor of the beef, the storing of the beef, and of course, the sale of that same beef.
So people who are selling you the beef wouldn't necessarily be direct marketing. They are marketing to you, and then it's going off to
the end
consumer.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah, there is some direct marketing involved, but that's the other part of this, or the other line of business.
Yeah. Well, just an update for those walking by. I'm Clay Connery of the Working Cows podcast, and we are joined here today by Ken Charferis, and he is the proprietor behind Wall Meats, and we are talking today with him about the importance of local meat processing. And so if you want to come and join us, so there's going to be an opportunity for audience questions. We've got a microphone set up right here front and center. You can come up and ask Ken your questions about local meat processing, about what it takes and what it takes to get involved and some of those things. So but for now, I guess I'd like to come back around to this conversation with you, Ken, and kind of talk about some of the what is your big picture vision. What are you hoping to in 5-10 years? What does this look like? What is the meat processing infrastructure in Western South Dakota look like? And how are you moving every day closer to that goal?
Wow, that's a big question. I mean, a huge question. Well, Clay, just for a little small business and what we do for just our local producer, we need to broach that envelope of, just containment. We also need to ensure that our food security is at hand. So at a small level, we'd like to just build that processing plant that could accommodate, within 100 miles of our producers that are wanting to do one thing, or several things. We're there for them. We don't stop and just ground beef or just cuts. We do all that it takes to get into the business of moving local beef to our consumers.
What would you say is the bottom line difference for the producer as far as dollars return to them difference from taking their calves to the sale barn in October versus bringing you a ready to butcher animal? What kind of a bottom line difference do you think there is there?
Well, I don't know. I'm not on the producer side of it. I just offer them, a little bit above the market price that they're getting, so that they can make a little bit of money on what they're raising for sure.
Right. That extra effort of producing, yeah. Taking that animal.
You can cut fuel costs if you
sure.
go through me. You can get the pricing challenges from us or an uptick in a little pricing.
Sure. You mentioned something earlier, and I guess we had a conversation and I came to this kind of realization that we can't necessarily eat every animal raised in Western South Dakota or in South Dakota. Every South Dakotan isn't capable of eating every animal raised in South Dakota, but we can feed every South Dakotan a South Dakota raised animal and not have all of that fuel cost and all those other costs in between the processing of that animal and the animal ending up in a freezer in a local grocery store. So I think that's kind of an interesting way of looking at it, and maybe a different way of looking at the goal here.
Oh yeah, absolutely different. So we have 4 million cattle, approximately here in South Dakota, 4 to 1 is the ratio. I can't eat four cows, and I don't think Scott out in the audience can either. But we can certainly try. So we can do two amongst each other, and then the other two we can actually process and provide our consumers either right here in locally or even out of state when we get that chance to do that. Folks from other states are actually trying to acquire South Dakota beef.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. What's the process there? What are some of the limitations that you are facing there as far as being able to market beef outside of the state of South Dakota that you've processed?
So currently the format we're using is a state-inspected product. And that can't go across state line unless somebody that's across the state line requests it. We can't solicit, obviously, across state lines. So the goal behind this next move or next evolution is to get approved for what is called the cooperative interstate shipment category, which says that I can go across state line. And the new meat plant is focused on getting a USDA certification to do exactly that.
Is that cooperative interstate shipment program a new thing, or has that been in place for a long time?
No, it's been in place for a long time. It's just there's only several states that are in that category.
Sure.
And we're state of South Dakota is actually pursuing that effort.
Okay, gotcha. And so that would open up all the other states that are participating in that category?
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
We will be part of the interstate movement. Gotcha. Local beef or pork and beef.
Sure. We talked earlier, and you mentioned kind of a three phase process that you're going through. Could you lay out that three phase process briefly, and then we'll circle back around and kind of hit each phase and talk about where we're at in the phases?
Absolutely. So you mentioned something about big plans, and wall has always been near and dear to us. But the plant is actually getting really too small for what we're doing, even with our employees. There is 15 employees, and the plant's built for five. So they're elbow to elbow at this point. And, of course, our storage facility and our freezers and our coolers are so small. So what do? We're running 200% capacity at this point, and we have been since February, especially since COVID arrived. So the plan to phase one's plan is to get a retail store that I can actually cut from. It's your traditional butcher shop with a deli counter and a retail setting to help cut protein in that scene. So that's phase one. Phase two is actually to build a new meat plant that I can accommodate 1,300 slaughter slots initially. The plant is going to be built to handle up to 4,000. So that's phase two. And that will be under a USDA format if possible. Now, phase three is going back to the place that's near and dear to me, which is Wall, South Dakota. And that plant will hold a fort until the new plant gets built. And I know it's kind of out there still, and it depends on, of course, scheduling and funding and approvals. But that the third phase will also be CIS certified by the state inspectors or the Animal Industry Board inspectors.
Sure.
And FSIS.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so kind of where does the retail store in Rapid City fit into that phase one?
The retail is really the face of what is now Wall Meats. It's if you really think about it, we dubbed it Wall Meats Rapid. Get it? Wall Meats Rapid?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was funny too. And a lot of folks on Facebook kind of voted for that name.
Sure.
So we'll stick with it.
Good. Well, it's always good to have consistent branding, right?
yeah, right. And the new plant will be branded a little differently, but we'll get there as a DBA.
Sure. Gotcha. So when we talked earlier, one of the things that both you and I talked about was the fact that, we are seeing kind of, I think, a return to the trades in in the world. We're seeing a lot more of the emphasis on the trades, you know, guys like Mike Rowe and his Mike Rowe Works program, and he is pushing people towards more involvement in the trades as a legitimate career path, and it's you know, college isn't right for everybody and those kinds of things. And one of those things I think is an early sign of that is the use of or the popularity of the small town butcher or the small town barbershop. And, you know, it seems like every time I go to get my haircut at a barbershop, there's a line, you know, and you're waiting 3, 4, 5 deep to get a haircut there. And you better have a couple hours, you know. And so there's just that return to that kind of desire for that kind of connection and that kind of atmosphere. And I think that going along with that, maybe I don't know how many dominoes this is down the road, but I think going along with that is the return of the small town butcher. And is that kind of part of the feel of what you're going for with the retail store in Rapid City?
That's exactly what I'm going for. It's really interesting you put all that together with Mike Rowe. Mike Rowe's a hero of mine, you know, and a hero of most, I think, because his hard work and his dedication to whatever that is the non, you know, high education kind of jobs. So the meat plant processing is, you know, it is that way now, but we're changing that tide. I think that the investment in education in processing, not just cutting meat, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. We all know it's hard work. It's bloody, it's gory, but, you know, there's some sales, there's some marketing, there's some advertising and all this. And what we teach our folks, or what we should be teaching our folks, is all those other avenues, and not just the non-glorious. It's not the NFL. You're not going to get famous doing it, but you are going to make people happy when their cuts are right and the protein is actually where they want it to be, whether it's High Choice or Prime, at the right price. Really, that's when you reach to the consumer level with those kinds of ammunition, if you will, you'll gain a lot of notoriety in just that, or some confidence that you're doing things the right way. And you have to balance all that. So you'll get a lot of questions, and you have to teach even not just the butchers, but the public on what they're eating.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of cuts are cuts and how they're supposed to be cooked, and what, you know, when you cut something with the grain or across the grain, you know, those kinds of butchering techniques is very vital to moving protein the right way.
Yeah. And so what are some of the limitations and challenges that go along with reviving that old school butcher shop?
I think it's the ideology of what it really is. You know, if you can break that boundary of this is not, you know, college is not for everybody, as we know, you know, and you said it earlier. So you provide that that job and that consistent workforce, an opportunity for some benefits and some care and some steady pay, good pay. You know, we get to, administer that as you own businesses.
Right.
If you take care of people, your people will take care of you. Yep. I did 30 years in the Air Force, and I always believe when I go to war with a cadre of people and I take care of them, we all come home.
Yeah, very good. So what's involved in the education of a good workforce, as far as the butcher shop is concerned, what's involved in educating those people? Where do you have to go to find those people? And then what goes into making sure that they are kicking out of a consistent quality product?
Well, okay. So, academia is actually jumping on board with us now. And they, you know, Western Dakota Tech is very involved in trying to put a course together. And they'll do the instructional piece of this and lecturing. We'll actually bring them in as an internship and a practical knowledge. So they teach them how to, what the book says about muscle separation, about, myoglobins. We'll bring them on the table and actually show them what those myoglobins are, the metaglobins, you know. And that's the kind of level that we need to teach our people. And some people may not want to know that, but you start teaching people their jobs and they'll start enjoying it. You know, you see it, you show them success and they breed success.
Right. Yeah. So anything else in phase one or any?
No, phase one is, phase one is now turning into now a lab.
Okay.
It'll be a meat lab, if you will. Once we start the course this fall with Western Dakota Tech, they'll start sending people our way to do the practical knowledge. So that lends to, you know, some practical experience and get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to partner with the Department of Labor and Department of Ed to try and write a curriculum for that in the meat lab itself, and then put them on a pay scale.
Nice. And will that happen in Wall or Rapid City?
It'll be in Rapid City initially. They'll have to come out to Wall to lab on the kill floor, and they'll learn how to slaughter a critter or two.
Sure.
And different species, because it's important that, you know, beef is rather large and pork is rather small but messier. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Skinning a hog and skinning a beef is not exactly as easy as each other.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. And so then do the cuts come packaged to the Rapid City store?
It will. Some of it will. Actually, half or quarters will come to the Rapid City store. There'll be other packages run from Wall to Rapid City in inspected format. But we'll do some cutting in Rapid as well. You know, if a customer comes up, and you remember the old butcher shops, a customer comes into a butcher shop and says, hey, I need a ribeye.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hang on a second. Let me cut you one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need 10. Well, let me cut you 10.
Right. Yeah.
That's what we're trying to bring back.
Cool. And the phase two then, you've been recently having some meetings about phase two, which is, I understand it, is a new meat plant in New Underwood. Is that right?
That's correct. We're attempting to put one in New Underwood, and we've had three meetings, Wall initially, and then went to New Underwood, actually four meetings, and we reached into Rapid City using a Western Dakota Tech's event center. And then last night we had a meeting in Box Elder. All three were very beneficial. You know, New Underwood seemed to be the biggest, largest crowd, and it makes sense. That's where the plant's going to go. And that was a more, energetic, more interactive kind of setting.
Mm.
And I thought it was all win, whether it was, a question or two that maybe got us to look at things differently. It was still a success.
Yep.
And that's really what I was looking for, was how do you feel, producers? What do you want me to do? I've done my due diligence with my producers and gave them the opportunity to tell me what they want.
Yeah.
Now it's my turn to take it to the next level and put something together they have voice with opinion.
Yeah, good. So who would you say was the drivers behind, or who? What was the majority of the crowd there? Was it producers? Was it consumers? Was it people interested in working in the meat plant? Was it an even mix of all three?
I think it was predominantly producers. They want to know where their beef is going to go to next. And interest in, of course, what we said earlier was, my job is to provide slots. They were very interested in how many slots I was going to provide and where they were going to be retail slots, you know, buying it from them, or custom slots for their own customers. And there's a mix there that we need to meet, a balance that we have to offer.
Mm-hmm. So once you get once the facility is up and the workforce is trained, do you anticipate week one, 25 animals?
Yeah, we set we're going to do 25 a week until we get our force trained. And as our forces get some competence and confidence, we'll move up with the availability or the processing slots.
And so will you be looking for a plant manager there?
Oh, I think we have one already identified.
Oh, good.
So for the last few years, I've been growing some core butchers.
Yep.
And teaching them in the art of cutting first, retail, marketing, and sales. And also, dealing with our customers like Scott. And how do you deal with Scott? You know, so those kinds of techniques are sometimes not just, born with. Sometimes they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure.
Try and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the learning center, is that kind of what we talked about already that's going on at Wall Meats, or is there going to be at Wall Meats in Rapid City, or is there a learning center also attached to this New Underwood facility?
Good question. Yeah, so the lab for now will be in Rapid City at the retail store, Wall Meats Rapid. Eventually, when we build a new meat plant, attached to the meat plant is going to be a learning center. And that learning center is going to provide a lot of services. For example, agritourism.
Mm-hmm.
We'll teach that, or we'll offer that tourism opportunity for our guest.
Yeah.
And also, we'll do some butchering classes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also do some culinary classes. We'll offer it up to our FFA to use whenever they want. We'll push everybody out if you want it. But yeah, and then, you know, eventually, or the goal is to use it as a learning center. And maybe, you know, used by producers. If they want to learn more about cattle genetics, whatever they need, it will bring a scientist in or whoever wants to speak to you. Farm Bureau may want to use it for a meeting.
Yeah.
That's an opportunity for everyone to use.
Yeah, absolutely.
In ag, yeah.
I mean, and a lot of the drive in genetics in agriculture, in ranching over the last, you know, 20 years has been, you know, increasing the size and the marbling of that ribeye and increasing the quality of the cuts and those things. So you could go there and see what are the differences, what's the difference in the choices that we've made, even, I would say, down to production decisions like grazing or feeding corn or feeding a different ration. You could probably do some A/B testing and see all that.
Yeah, it's all there.
That's cool.
Yeah, it'll even have a kitchen for R&D stuff. I like to cook anyway, so I'll grab a ribeye from Scott's Beef and try to make sure it's good, and then he'll share it with me. I know he won't. He'll try. He'll let me. Watch this guy.
Sounds like a good idea. We're just a couple of minutes away from kind of taking some questions. If there's anybody who's got questions, if there's anybody who wants to throw out or come up to the microphone and get your heckling of Ken recorded, we'll give you that opportunity in a few minutes. But we've kind of covered phases one and two, unless there's something else we've left on the table. But we'll move on to phase three if not.
I'm ready.
All right. So phase three, what's that look like in your mind?
So phase three is actually lessons learned from phase two. So what we'll do is we'll build phase two as a meat plant. Then we'll take all those technology that we've infused into phase two and bring it to our start of wall, where we started, which is wall. You know, it's all going to be timing. It's going to be funding. It's going to be opportunity to do that with.
Yep.
So phase three is actually, you know, to replace what was there before.
Sure.
That plant's 53 years old. You know, it's 24,000 square feet. The foundation is cracking. The walls are moving. it's going to be difficult. Every time I fix something, something else breaks.
Yeah.
And then I fix that thing, and the thing I just fixed, it breaks again.
Right. So. Yeah, I've often said that about old houses. You go in there, and if you pull on that thread long enough, you'll wind up naked. So you just it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's scary. I didn't say that.
what kind of timeline are you thinking on phase two? Anyways, is there a
so phase two? As we speak to our contractors, they're talking 6 to 8 weeks on just the module system. Which if we pick the module system, we're going to need 9 modules, so 6 to 8 weeks per module.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we heard last night that they can do 2 simultaneously, okay, or have an assembly line to go through. So we're hoping and praying that we meet January 2022. So that's pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's pretty aggressive. I'm thinking more spring of 2022.
Right.
So what we're going to do is, When that occurs and we get it up and running and sustained, sustainment is really the key to that whole process, just like it is for rapid, well, meets rapid.
Sure.
Is we'll get the sustainment portion and call it a success.
Yep. So spring 2022.
Roughly, yes.
Roughly ramped up and 25 a week.
Yes, sir, to start off with.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the units can actually handle 75 a week.
Right.
That's only going to depend on workforce, though.
Right. Yep, workforce and supply and buy-in from the
and cattle right, from our producers.
Yeah. So I guess I got about one question left, I think. So if there's anybody who's got questions for Ken that you want to talk about local meat processing, if you've got interest in having beef processed locally, we're opening it up for questions here at the microphone down in front, front and center right here in front of the stage. So if you're walking by and you've got a question about local beef processing, feel free to come on up and have your question answered. But I guess my last question is, what can organizations organizations like Farm Bureau and FFA do to help you fulfill this vision?
Oh, not just my vision, but maybe all other processors. It'd be nice and beneficial for all to support and talk up processing and, you know the value of locally raised beef and protein and just talk that up for bigger organizations. That there's going to be a course instituted here this fall. I think a little help from either some of the organizations for that cost. You know, if that person just comes out of high school and really doesn't want to, doesn't have the resource to afford the course, I think organizations should fall behind that and support meat processing.
Yeah, like a scholarship.
Yes, exactly. Gotcha. That.
Very cool. Yeah. And so policy-wise, are there any big policy roadblocks that are standing in your way?
No, actually, the legislators and at the state and federal level are very engaged. And, we're talking rather frequently. Senator Thune's office have reached out. You know, we've heard from before the current Department of our Secretary of Ag. We're kind of in interaction with those folks.
Sure.
So, an AIB is really my channel to policymakers. Give us some room to qualify for low interest loans when we need it, and then get up our way. We'll fix it.
Yeah. Let the free market work.
That's right. Let private businesses do private business.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you've got an ally on that front in Farm Bureau for sure. So really appreciate the time today, Ken. I will welcome any questions if anybody's brave enough to step up to the microphone and ask a question.
Anybody but Scott.
Oh, okay. This is not Scott.
I've got one question for you, Ken. If you're going to butcher 75 a week, how many a day are you thinking there? Are you going to do that all in one day?
Or? No, it can't be all one day. It's got to be an 8-hour period, Scott. And we'll get up to that, as we get better with butchers.
Right.
And we meet up to, what is that? Can somebody divide that by 5?
75 divided by 5 is
about
15, right?
Yep.
So you're going to have an inspector there every day?
We hope to. I mean, that's really what they're going to do. What I think USDA is going to do is they're going to come and do a study on what we can do within 8 hours, right? And as we go, we got to work with them to do another study. As we go up, they'll do another study, and that will let them know if they need another inspector or not.
Right. So what's your hopes or what's your thoughts on the state inspected beef being able to cross state lines, or when do you think that will?
Well, I got some update, I guess. Currently, two inspectors were trained and tested and passed. So we could be at the brink of doing this in weeks, depending on what the feds say. I think that's where it's going to go to next, is the state will have to let the feds know that they have inspectors ready. That's where I think they're at now, Scott. Good question, though.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Anybody else? Questions about local meat processing?
I thought that was going to be a hard question.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time again today, Ken. Really been a great opportunity to kind of get some understanding. If somebody's interested in doing this podcast is going to go out all over the United States and all over the world. If somebody's interested in doing this, and would you be willing to answer questions?
Absolutely. I'm here to help not just my crew, but any other processor that wants to open up a business. It's not easy. It's just like opening up any other business. You got to worry about some key numbers and, like cost of goods sold and labor cost and prime cost. All those you have to be worried about and to succeed. But I'm here to help anyone that wants to listen.
Yeah. And I think that's part of your vision, too, for the New Underwood facility, is to be a place where butchers can come and get trained, even if they're somewhat local. They can from there.
That's right. Yeah. And then they can reach into us, and then we can train them, and then they can go wherever they want.
Yeah, very good. Well, Ken, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Clay. I appreciate it.
My guest today has been Ken Charferis from Wall Meats. He's been a great informative guest about some of the issues facing producers and consumers of local beef, and really appreciate that opportunity. And we'll see you again soon with another episode of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.